Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. To another episode of the I Thought I Was Proper Mental Podcast. Another episode, in fact, episode 18, and the big 2-0 is rapidly approaching. If you can hear other voices vaguely in the background, that's my son having his bedtime story, and it's called I Need a Wee, and every now and again he's sporadically shouting that sentence through the ceiling. Maybe you just heard that then. So Proper Mental, episode 18. And my guest this week is Dr. Poonam Krishnan, who is an NHS GP in Glasgow. She's also a medical educator and the director of the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine. You might well recognise her. Well, I suppose unless you're one of her patients in Glasgow, it's much more likely that you'll recognise her from BBC Good Morning Live and other programmes across the Beeb. She's also a writer for the Glasgow Times and a podcast host as well. Her specialist interests in medicine are public health, women's health, and mental health and well-being. Yeah, so I wanted to record an episode about medication because it's such a, not a controversial subject, but it's much debated. I'm a firm believer that medication is an individual choice. And I think some people it works for, some people it doesn't. And that everyone should be able to make that choice for themselves. The problem with medication, I think, is that there's so much stigma and so much sort of misinformation out there that a lot of people choose not to and maybe don't get the benefits or the help that they could potentially get, you know, if they're making that decision based on something that isn't quite true. And I just know that firsthand. So a few people sort of talked to me about, have you tried medication? Over the years when I wasn't very well. And I always really tried my hardest not to take medication. And there was loads of reasons behind that. You know, there was loads of stuff about admitting that I actually had a problem and, you know, making it official and the whole being scared to go to a GP thing. But I'd also had all these horror stories, you know, and I was worried it was going to turn me into a zombie. I was worried I was going to have horrendous side effects. You know, people say things like, ah, oh, they're addictive. It took me 10 years to get off my antidepressants and stuff like that. And it made me really, really fearful of them. And, you know, unfortunately, I got to a place where it was the only thing left and the alternative, you know, wasn't really a viable option. And yeah, and I tried them and they, you know, they worked for me. They're working very well for me. And like I say, they're not for everyone, but if I had known, if I'd have had a bit more factual information at my fingertips, then I might have made a positive decision about my mental health earlier on. And so I wanted to do a medication episode and I wanted to, obviously I'm not really qualified to talk about it other than my own experience. So I reached out to Dr. Poonam via Instagram. And just said, you know, could we have a bit of a meds chat, you know? So this conversation does factor a lot on medication and I suppose the whole GP experience, you know, so what it's like when you contact your GP, when you walk through the door and first sit down and, you know, what your options are, how the process works, all that sort of stuff. Obviously, everyone's experience is different, you know. We mentioned a couple of times on this, we're not trying to speak for everyone. We're not trying to convince people to do one thing or another. It's very much an open conversation, just laying down some of the guidelines, some of the information that's out there. We're certainly not trying to sway anyone either way. But Poonam was amazing. She was really up for the conversation. She was really happy to help. She's incredibly passionate about mental health. And it was great to get her side of things, right? Because she's, you know, she's on the front line. You know, she's a practicing GP. She has a clinic a couple of days a week and she sees so many people. So to hear, you know, hear about the stats and hear about, well, we all hear about the stats, but to actually sit down with someone who's like in amongst those stats and trying to make positive changes on a day-to-day basis, you know, it was fascinating, really. It was really, really useful. And we talk about meds, we talk about our own experiences with mental health, we talk about lifestyle medicine, which is really interesting. Poonam chats all about how she kind of looks after herself and juggles an incredibly busy family life with a very busy job and all the like media commitments and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it was really, really interesting. And yeah, I really enjoyed myself. She's a lovely, lovely person. And, you know, if you follow her on social media, you'll know how busy she is. She's a mum, she's a wife. She's got all these different like commitments to her patients and to all the other things that she does. And yeah, we sat down like early on a Sunday morning, which I just thought was lovely of her to give up a, you know, an hour of her precious time to chat about these things. And it just, you know, it just sort of shows how passionate she is and how committed she is to her work, because she didn't have to do that at all. If you want to connect with Dr. Poonam, then it's at Dr. Poonam Krishnan on Instagram or Twitter. And her podcast that she co-hosts is called The Medic Mum, and you can get that on all podcast platforms. If you'd like to catch up with me about anything in this episode or any other episodes for that matter, at Proper Mental Podcast on all platforms, yeah, give me a shout. I'm always happy to chat. Let me know what you think. And if you like this episode and other episodes, then by all means, leave me some nice words in the review section. So here we go, Proper Mental episode 18 with Dr. Poonam. Thank you for listening. Enjoy. Okay, so here we are with another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast. And my guest this morning is Dr. Poonam. How are you, mate?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very good indeed. Thank you very much for joining me. This will go out in a couple of weeks, but it's actually a Sunday morning. So I'm very appreciative of you of giving up your Sunday morning to have a chat with me.
No, not at all. I think it's such an important conversation, something that I care a lot about. So really pleased that we're doing this.
Oh, fantastic. So we're going to have a bit of a chat about medication. And obviously that's a very big topic. And we're just going to try and do a very impartial kind of overview of the thought process behind, you know, from a GP perspective around the appointment. But we kind of, before we go down that rabbit hole, I was hoping to ask you a little bit about yourself, Dr. Poonam, and how you came to medicine and all that sort of stuff.
Gosh, where do you want me to start?
How long have you been in general practice?
So I qualified as a doctor. Oh my God, you've got me in 2006. And then I went on to do my junior doctor years, and then you spend another 3 years on top of that to specialise as a GP, which I did in 2011. So there you go. I've been a GP for a while. Gonna sound like a dyke.
And over that time, Dr. Poonam, have you kind of, when we talk about mental health, have you seen a sort of rise in more people coming through your doors to ask for help with these sorts of things?
Absolutely. We've seen a huge rise over the last decade, even in my time, because, and I think it's multifactorial. I think that generally the demands on people has increased so much. I think that mental health is very complex. But I think another reason why we're seeing more and more people is because we have more awareness being raised, and slowly but surely, we're starting to normalize the conversation of mental health. So the more and more people that hear about it, that hear it's okay to get some help for it, they're starting to present more to the doctor.
Yeah, and it's great that people can kind of feel comfortable to take that step, right, to ask for help, because that's traditionally the thing that people have maybe struggled with a little bit.
Absolutely. And I think that, like, I come at it from a perspective in that I had my own experience of mental health, which caught me completely off guard. I think all of us, particularly from my generation and above, have traditionally kind of thought mental health, it is stigmatized. We see it as something taboo. We see it as something that should be hidden, not spoken about. You're weak, you're, you know, talking about it just it just evokes this kind of sense of, oh my God, not you, you know? So for me, and particularly somebody who comes from, I come from an Indian background, in my culture as well, mental health was never spoken about. So when I found myself very vulnerable after the birth of my first child and I had postnatal depression, it took me a very long time to seek help because one, it was just wasn't something normal that happened in my community. Number two, even though I'm a doctor, it adds that extra level of almost kind of stigma, you know, like I was a doctor, how could I have it? You know, so I was almost ashamed of it. And that kind of led to things like denial and not going to see my doctor, not speaking about it. And I suffered alone for a very long time before seeking help. So I think that the reason this topic, this area of medicine has become so close to my heart is that only really when you've experienced it yourself too, you can understand just how painful it can be to suffer and to go through it. And pain is the right word. You know, I think that we associate pain with being such a visceral thing, but actually mental health, it's just so important that everybody appreciates and learns that they are capable of it. Nobody is immune. And going to speak to your doctor about it should absolutely be an empowering moment for you, not something that makes you feel weak.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. I think it's really interesting you mentioned that, actually, because it was something I wanted to talk to you about is obviously with the big topic at the moment is like men's mental health and that, you know, men not feeling like they can speak up and stuff like that. But that is so true of all aspects because of cultural elements, because of your job, right? And there must be a certain pressure when you work in wellness, you work to help other people. Yeah, it must be very challenging to be able to say, I need some help too, right?
Yeah, it is. It's very, very much so. And especially for men. And we are seeing a rise even in the healthcare profession of people burning out, of really struggling, perhaps even turning to other substances to be able to help them because they don't know how to come forward and admit that they're struggling. And something over this last year in this pandemic, I have seen firsthand just a complete quadrupling of the number of people that are coming in where on a typical day as a GP, I see anywhere between 30 to 35 patients a day. I used to maybe have like maybe a handful less than of cases of where mental health was the topic. Whereas now pretty much every second consultation I'm having, there's, you know, people are presenting with very physical symptoms, but then when we break it down to get to the root cause of it, mental health is at its core. So it's just been like, you know, we do foresee the tsunami of mental health ahead of us, and it's affecting men, women, people of all ages, from the young to the very old. Like, it's something that actually is binding in common to us all.
Yeah, definitely. So I mean, when, you know, what really fascinates me about people who work in medicine, I actually worked for the NHS for 7 years. I used to work in a hospital. So I kind of feel like I've seen firsthand how, you know, some of the things staff have to deal with and stuff like that. But from your own point of view, how do you protect your own mental health? Because a lot of stuff about your job would involve doing a lot of the things that we're told to do to protect our mental health is not available to you, like working long hours and stress and all these sorts of things. So it must be a real challenge to balance that, right?
It is. And I eternally talk about this in my own sort of Instagram. It's that, you know, how do you do the juggle? I'm also a parent. I've got two young children. And I guess that this is where my own experience came into it of when, you know, I struggled with my own mental health challenges several years ago. It was almost like learning to walk again once you've actually admitted and opened up and got the help. And then you almost think, well, how do I strengthen my mind again? And I think this is what people forget. They think that a pill is going to fix everything. Okay. And I think medication absolutely has its role. But actually learning that your lifestyle is also a very valuable addition to that, and going back to basics and looking at where's the root cause, where does that stem? For me, postnatal depression was, it was like the trigger. But actually when I ultimately many, many years later actually got therapy, because again, I saw that as something like, oh God, that's weak, I can't, I'm not sure, I don't need it. But when you start to unpack and understand your journey of experiences through life, there's lots of micro moments which go on to inform where you end up ultimately, because life is happening to all of us all the time. But what amplifies that is the lifestyle that we have. And over the years, everything has become so fast-paced, 24/7. You know, things are always coming at us, whether you're juggling work, whether you're juggling family. In the healthcare profession particularly, at the end of a long day, you know, I'm frazzled. We're taking on, as a GP, people don't appreciate this, but every 10 minutes you're seeing another patient. Every 10 minutes you've got to recalibrate. You might have just broken some terrible news to somebody, and the next minute you're like, okay, how can I help you today? Oh my god, you're pregnant, that's amazing. Right, let's talk about that. And 10 minutes later you're like, I'm so sorry, you've broken your hip. Right, what can we do to help that? The next minute you could have somebody, you know, that's really struggling mentally and maybe in crisis. So you're having to constantly every 10 minutes reprogram yourself and try and deal with the problem ahead of you. By the end of that day, your mind is just, because we worry about our patients. I think about my patients long after the consultation. I often find myself waking up, particularly those that are really unwell, you know, panicking in the middle of the night or thinking, did I forget something? Did I not do something? So when you ask the question of how do I protect my mental health, it's trying, over the years I've learned, particularly over this pandemic, is focusing on the little things. I think that you sometimes think like, okay, I'm going to go out for a run every single day and there's no ifs, ands or buts. And actually setting expectations like that for yourself can be quite challenging, because if you don't meet that, it's just another thing that you failed. So I've kind of learned just to have micro moments. If I can get out just once a day, even if it's for a walk around the block with my dog at lunchtimes during the day, I love to just, if I can get 10 minutes, it's just to kind of have my lunch outside or go outside. Having moments to just breathe. And as funny as that might sound, you know, it's just that 1 minute, for example, of just going, I'm going to switch off everything and just breathe. I talk a lot to like the journey home. I'll always either phone my mum and be like, or listening to like your favorite tunes, blasting them up, like all these little things. You know, I don't deny myself. If I feel like I need a treat, I don't sit and punish myself for it. I think it's learning to listen to what works for you, what brings you that micro moment of comfort, and doing them a lot more, because all these little things add up. And what we often focus on is it needs to be that holiday that I'm going to look forward to, and that's when I'm going to relax. And actually what you find is you're so burnt out by that time, and people go, I always get ill when I go on holiday. And you're like, yeah, because actually we need to take care of ourselves every day so that we're not burning ourselves out.
Yeah, I absolutely, I love that. Yeah, I was kind of, when you were talking then, I was thinking it's almost like a mental health snack. You know, yeah. So you just like, you just, when you get a bit peckish and you go to the fridge door, it's like that for your mental health. And there's some amazing wellness techniques out there, and the wellness industry is really, well, I suppose the problem with it is now it's become an industry. So now everyone's trying to sell us stuff, right? And when you try and do all the things that are going to supposedly keep you well, and you can't do all the things because you've already got so many other things to do, it just becomes almost another stick to beat yourself with if you're not in the right state of mind.
Absolutely. I mean, something that I do, like I have like this massive stack of little like notebooks that I just bought from Poundland, like, and when I'm speaking to somebody who's really struggling, and I work in an area with a lot of deprivation, so we've got to be mindful. I can't say like, make sure you're meditating like twice a day, like it doesn't work. You've got to very much look at the patient before you. But something that was a game changer for me, and now I give out to my patients, is gratitude journals. And I think that when somebody said this to me at the time when I felt in my darkest moment, and even though we know that there's lots of science and evidence to back, you know, the power of journaling and gratitude work, it's the last thing you want to do when you're in that pits, because you don't feel grateful. Like, you just feel shit. So I remember just thinking, oh, this is just nonsense. And when I started doing it, no matter what mood or what my day had been like, just thinking about three small things that I felt happy or grateful for, it made such a big impact. And I started doing that before I went to bed. And it, you know, several years later, this is like, it's a non-negotiable for me. I've taught my son this. He's 7 now. He's been doing it with us since he was 3. And at the end of every day, we sit down and we all go through 3 things that either went well that day or that we're grateful for. And so I have this little, these teeny little flimsy notebooks, and I'll give them out to my patients. I say, here, just take this away with you. You don't need to bring it back. You don't need to tell me anything about it. If you feel like it, just three things at the end of the day, just jot them down of something that you're grateful for. The number of patients I've had over the years have gone, that was just beautiful. That really helped me. It really helped me. Just being grateful for the meal that I had today, or the fact that I've got a home when so many people don't. And these little things make a big difference. And I think that the more we start thinking about prescribing or advocating for, as you say, these mental health snacks, the more I think that we will push towards a more mentally stable society, because we're so good at going, a snack means a packet of crisps. But actually, let's just normalize, a snack can be, let's just sit down and just take five out, and that's totally fine, you know? So I'm a big self-compassion breaks. I think that they're just a massive thing to incorporate for the longevity of your mental health.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Something I say a lot is success leaves clues, and it's not a coincidence that, you know, gratitude and journaling gets mentioned time and time again by people who use it and have seen the benefits of it and stuff like that. And something that just occurred to me then that I absolutely love is the idea of you doing that with your children, because mental health, it feels a little bit to me like a lot of these things have almost, as a society, have caught us by surprise. So everything was good and now it's not, and we're seeing these figures going up and we're seeing all this stuff. So as well as tackling that, we need to think about, right, well, how can we make it so it doesn't keep going up, right? And then that's always where we start with the children. So to be able to get kids talking about this stuff, so it just be, we don't have to normalize it then, because to them it will just be normal, right, if we can start at a young age.
Definitely. And I think this is it, when we think about how are we going to change the future, something I never heard growing up, like in a positive way, was mental health. You know, from the language that we use to the people that were affected, and almost like at times people were talking about it in such a shameful manner that, you know, they've got X, Y, and Z, or they'll never get married because of X, Y, and Z, particularly in my community. And I never saw my grown-ups cry. Like, you know, that, I mean, I never saw my dad cry. Never knew that my dad, you know, may have, like, at times, like, had blips. I just thought they got up every day, they were just fine. And that's just not normal, because we have emotions. Like, as humans, we are capable of experiencing the entire range of feelings. And I think that our kids need to be able to see that. So there's been times where I've cried and my little boy has gone, "Mommy, are you okay?" And mommy's having a bit of a bad day. It's okay to say that, because when he has a bad day now, he knows he can talk to mommy about it, and we talk it out. And I love the fact that even in his class, the teachers talk about mental health, about worries, about how, what to deal with when you've got those worries. Put them in a jar, put the words on a tree, or, you know, little things. But we're big advocates for saying, okay, you know, especially over this pandemic, he really struggled, my little boy, with anxiety, and we could see it because actually it was coming out in physical ways, which is how children communicate mental health to us. They don't tend to know that sad equals what, they go, I have a sore tummy, my head's hurting, I feel a bit sick, don't want to eat, maybe they're overeating, you know. So to be able to pick up these signs, and he missed his friends, and we started going, okay, well, let's go out for a walk. And we started doing, I love this thing called anxiety blast off, which is, you know, have you heard of it?
Like, no.
Where the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, where wherever you are in your environment, you look at 5 things that you can see, 4 things that you can touch and feel, 3 things that you can hear. Oh God, now we're getting it all mixed up. 3 things that you can hear, 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste. And we would do this, like, throughout, you know, we'd go out for a walk and we'd do that. And it was just immediately, it's so grounding. It's a mindful practice. And he was like, we can't see anyone, can we hug trees? And of course, there's lots of evidence about nature. I was like, yes, oh God, did we hug loads of trees? But I think just him understanding that these are just very normals to him, for looking after his mental well-being, although we're not calling it that, it just makes me feel really happy. Like, I'm like, it's a job well done if we can teach them to own their emotions and thoughts from a very young stage, so it's normal.
Yeah, and half the battle, isn't it, is people realize that they can talk about their feelings. And, you know, if we can start that at a young age, my son, when he went back to school, he was the same. He was very, very nervous about it. And he'd say, "Oh, daddy, I feel nervous." And so we'd sit down with him and say, "Well, why do you feel nervous?" It's very normal to feel that sometimes daddy feels nervous about his job and things like this. And on the walk to school, we tend to concentrate on, we'll say, so what do you know? What do we know we're going to see today? What's your teacher called today? What, you know, is so-and-so going to be there? Where are you going to put your coats? And we talk about all the things that won't be strange and won't be unusual, you know, and that seems to work for us. I think, yeah, just validate his feelings, just show him that that's the aim, is it validate people's feelings, because I think society kind of does that. It's got, "Oh, you feel nervous, ah, you'll be fine, crack on," but you won't be fine. You need to feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's respecting, like, I think in my generation, there wasn't a lot of respect for children. It was very much like, "We're the grown-ups, you're the kids." Like, if you wanted to have a quiet moment, it was dictated on adult time. So actually now it's recognizing if your child wants to have a bit of quiet time, that's absolutely fine, because they get overwhelmed too. Taking out the time and talking to them. I think talking is a thing we do a lot, but when it comes to mental health, we become quiet.
Yeah.
And that's when we need to talk more. And I think that's important, is that let's talk about the good feelings, but let's talk some about the blippy feelings too.
Yeah, because everyone has mental health. We tend to think of it as something that only happens to certain people, and you're either going to have problems or you're not. But I think what we're finding is it doesn't discriminate. And it's certainly at any time in your life, you can think it's okay for a long time. It was once described to me, it's like a little crack in your windscreen, and you start off and you go, "Oh, I need to get that sorted." And then you just kind of forget about it. And then over time, the crack gets bigger and you go, "Oh, I really need to do something about that." And that just keeps happening until your windscreen smashes. And I think if everyone can be proactive towards their own mental health and get that windscreen fixed, then it's going to make a big difference.
Absolutely. I mean, when I look out into my waiting room, not right now in the pandemic sphere, we don't have busy, busy, like full waiting rooms. But, you know, I would look out and you would have, you know, loads of people sitting there, from people of all backgrounds, from all professions. You'd never know what they're going to come in with, you know, and you'd open the door and the person probably you least expected, from the way that they looked, they'd have like been really struggling in crisis from mental health, but yet they were functioning, they were working, they were doing. And people, that's the thing, is that it's such a silent condition, and also one that can be very easily masked, that you just don't know what's going on behind closed doors for people. And I think this is where this element of kindness comes in, is that we must always speak to people with kindness, with respect, and appreciate that whatever might be going on for them, they might be struggling in some level. And just because physically you can't see a cast on their leg doesn't mean that there isn't a problem there. And I think especially in the workplace, especially right now during this like pandemic, is for even employers, for colleagues, to really just be a little bit more mindful, because people have gone through so much over this last year. You know, it breaks my heart every day, some of the stories that I hear of what people have gone through, but yet they will just walk into work, they will turn up, they will do their thing. But if you've noticed somebody's having a bit of a down day, perhaps not performing as usual or whatever, you know, take the time out and just ask them if they're okay. And encourage that open space of, like, you know, hold it for them, so that people feel that they can talk if they want, and if they need a bit of space, you know, be kinder about offering that.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about normalizing it, and how nice would it be even if we could get past mental health to just live like that, you know, so it doesn't even have to be till you get to the point, because a lot of the talk about, particularly around depression and stuff, it's like, "Oh, if you're struggling, speak out," but why do we have to wait till we're struggling, right? Can we just get in there first? And
oh, absolutely. You know, for the times where people have come in an absolute crisis, where relationships have fallen apart, jobs have been lost, perhaps even turned to things like alcohol, and you think, If only you had spoken to somebody 3 years ago when this first happened, we wouldn't be here today. But then, do you know what? The most important thing is, at whatever stage you seek the help, just know that help is available. It's you know, it's never too late. Never let it get any worse than the moment that you're at. Whoever is listening to this, if you're struggling in any way, it's just, we can always help and try and get things better. And I think that you've got to be ready as well to be able to speak about it. And I just hope that these conversations that you have with the people that listen, appreciate that whenever that moment is, it's just know that even if there's nobody that you trust or feel in your own personal space that you can speak to, your GP absolutely is that shoulder that you can cry on. And I remember my GP once said this to me. She said, let me be your shoulder to cry on. And all I needed actually was just to speak to her, because I felt like I didn't want to burden my family. I didn't want to burden my friends. I didn't want to talk to my colleagues about it. But actually that confidential space where I knew it wasn't going to be spoken about with anybody else ultimately led to me getting the help that I needed. So yeah, I think just it's important that people understand that there's a lot of GP bashing that does go on, but ultimately we're there to help our patients, and mental health is one of the most important, most critical areas of medicine that there is.
Yeah, very much so. So if someone walks through your door for an appointment, and like you said before, you don't know what you're going to get. And I think just as like a prerequisite to this conversation, I think it's important to mention that, you know, mental health is multifaceted. There's all different types of mental health. We tend to fall into the habit of talking about depression and anxiety, but there's all this other stuff, right? But we can't cover everything. I can only talk about my own experience. So that's what we're going to do today. And I think as well, for the same reasons, if we look at that at the point of view as like, you know, like a male, because that's what the statistics are all about at the moment, that's my own experience. So if someone in my age group, so I'm 40 years old, you know, comes into you and is presenting, maybe talking about, you know, having low mood or some dark thoughts or stuff like that, what do you look out for? And how do you start the conversation from your perspective? Because it is hard for people to know how to describe what's happening with them. So I would imagine you get a lot of people who sit down in that chair and they don't quite know what to say. So how do you get the information for you to make decisions?
Yeah, something actually I would say before we do that is as a tip almost, is write down what's going on. Because quite often when you're sitting in the hot seat as a patient, everything can go out your mind, or you can suddenly feel like, I've had a couple of times where people have come in wanting to speak about something else and have maybe tested the water by chatting about something completely different to just kind of gauge you and suss you out as a doctor, and then go away and come back and say, actually the thing I really wanted to talk about wasn't my toenail, I'm struggling, you know. So I think just writing it down, writing just even some buzzwords, or put it in your notes in your phone, it makes that conversation easier if you're struggling to find the words. And you can just pass that over to the doctor and we can then start the conversation for you. But usually, you know, I would start off by just asking, how are you? What's going on? In our taking, quite often, the area that we love focusing on that we're taught at medical school is about social history. So, you know, finding out, gauging, if you don't already know the patient, what's your job? What's it like at the moment? Who's at home with you? You know, even these sort of conversation starters are important, but actually just starting with mood. How's your mood at the moment? What's your energy levels like? It's all about exploring and opening up and building rapport with your patient, I guess. Often at the moment, what I'm finding is that physical problems are the main thing. People are coming in with headaches, they're coming in with skin flare-ups, gut issues, sort of these types of things are, when we kind of get down to the root cause, we might find actually, you know, somebody the other day was saying to me, you know, my bowels have just been all up and down over the last kind of few months. And it sounded very much like irritable bowel syndrome. But I then just said, so tell me what's going on at home. How have you been coping over the last few months? And actually, it's been mad, you know, furloughed, sort of issues with children that have been struggling. And actually, when we boiled it down, it's been chronic stress that is now causing physical symptoms. And then we went into talking about, how are you feeling? What's been going on? But I guess the most important sort of avenue that I love to kind of go down, and we have to go down, is looking at what red flags there are. Are there any signs that tell us that there's some more sinister features going on, that this person might be in crisis, might be at high risk? So absolutely, as you said, we look at men are, you know, statistically we know that there are higher rates of suicide, and so looking at how low is the mood, you know, if they were to kind of tell us on a spectrum. Are they managing to sleep? What's sleep like? Are they able to do the things that they used to be able to enjoy doing before? Any loss of interest in hobbies and activities? What's their relationship like? Any change in libido? Are they having any thoughts or doing anything to self-harm? Is there any substance misuse, any alcohol or drug misuse? And are they actually having any thoughts about sort of hopelessness of the future, about ending their life? Have they made any plans? These things are really important because that escalates the level of urgency with what we need to get further help and intervention for.
Yeah, fantastic. It's all that. And I've heard you mention this before, like lifestyle medicine, right? So yeah, making sure that there's certain basics are in play, because that's going to really inform the bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Lifestyle medicine is huge. And it's this concept of our lifestyle, right down from what we eat to the way we eat to how much sleep we're getting, the management of our stress and incorporating things like relaxation into our day. Are we getting physical activity, any exercise? These things are so powerful because they release the body's natural chemicals that are there to help elevate and improve our mood. We need to be in balance with that. Whereas this last year, what's happening is you're waking up and everything is coming at you. Our worlds have been online. We have been living on tenterhooks, waiting for the next daily briefing to find out if we're able to kind of do the things that we have always associated with normal. We're all still craving to see our loved ones, to be able to be in close contact with all those things that nourish us, nourish our minds and our spirits. We've not had access to that. So with lifestyle, it's all about what we do on an everyday basis will be the indicator for whether we develop chronic disease later. And at the moment, mental health being one, but heart disease, type 2 diabetes, strokes, even certain cancers, you know, our lifestyles dictate whether we're at higher risks of that. And if we're not looking after how we sleep, how we eat, how we exercise, how we move, and our mind and well-being, then, you know, ultimately that will last us for a few years, but it's going to have a long-term impact on everything else that crumbles later on.
Yeah, sure. So just to bring kind of like medication into it, is it a case of making sure that those things are in place first before we start talking about medication? And I really understand that this is a very general conversation. We're not going to get into like the names of stuff. We're not here to diagnose anyone, any like that. It's just a general feel. But yeah, that kind of makes sense to me, right? That the certain things need to be happening before medication comes in, because we don't want to become reliant on that alone.
Absolutely. I think it's really important that we mention that medication has its place. Medication is important. It's not, like I always say to my patients, a pill is not going to fix your problem. It's like taking painkillers for pain. And actually, if we don't know what the underlying cause is, ultimately over time you could be popping those pills, they will lose effectivity over a while, you might become dependent on them, or you might need more and more higher doses. But if we're not going to treat the actual cause of the pain, then we're in trouble. And the same goes for mental health. Medications have long had so much stigma and so much taboo attached to them. People feel shameful and don't like saying that they're on it, but they can really help. I think if somebody is struggling with their mental health, you know, their whole job is to help release certain chemicals into the body, into the brain, that would help sort of equalize and make us feel like we feel happier, we feel a bit more energetic. It can impact your sense, your general sense of being and sleep. So they are important, but they're not the be all and end all. Yes, every medication has a potential to have side effects, but there's just horror stories online. There's horror stories in the media, which then puts people off. And, you know, you might be like, I've got patients that be like, well, you know, I feel terrible. Like, I don't have the motivation to exercise. I don't feel like doing this. I don't feel like doing that. And so to even help them sometimes just get that little bit of a boost at the beginning with a medication, and you'll find a few weeks later, they're like, actually, I feel so much better. I'm sleeping better, which means when I wake up in the morning, I'm feeling better to want to go out and get some fresh air. And that's helped me. And little by little, things start coming together again. And these medications, as much as the myths tell you, they're not addictive. They're not long term. You are in the driver's seat for them. And I never have my patients on them for long term unless they want to be or they feel that it's benefiting them. But they can be life-changing for some people. And I think if something gives you a little lift at the beginning, then it's better to go down that route safely, so that when we can kind of get you mentally into a point where you can think about it, you can then consider that, you know, whether it's your lifestyle. We must never rule out therapy. Therapy is so important. Counseling, cognitive behavioral therapy, talking therapies, these are so powerful. And again, we kind of think, oh God, seeing somebody for like as a therapist, like, you know, I've had a patient go, I'm not mental. Like, why do I want to go talk to somebody? And I'm like, no, that's the point is, if you had, you know, I don't know, if you'd fractured your, I don't know, foot, we would send you to an orthopedic surgeon. You wouldn't be like worried about that. You know, if you had diabetes and we couldn't control it, we'd send you to an endocrinologist. You wouldn't be worried about that. So why is it when you feel a little bit broken at the moment in your mind that we don't send you to somebody that's going to help you piece it together? And I think that we need to normalize that having medication, getting therapy, and then looking at all your kind of like areas of life where there might be small improvements that you can make. All of these things help to bring you back to equilibrium, which is what we want to do. And it's a slow process. It doesn't happen overnight. And I think accepting that and understanding that is important. And it's about making small changes. I think people think that it's got to be tomorrow I'll wake up and I will eat better and I will exercise and I will, you know, prioritize. It's too overwhelming. It's picking small things that you think, right, I'm going to work on this for the next month. And if that is in tandem with a medication, then so be it. And I think it's just having that. We review patients regularly. If I start somebody on a new antidepressant, I always say, right, it'll take a few weeks before it kind of gets into the system and before that you're at a level where you might feel it's working. At that point, we will review you. We always start on the lowest possible dose and then we monitor it for any side effects, which, you know, to be honest, especially with the drugs that we have now, there are minimal side effects. So I think that, yeah, I'm glad that you're talking about this because it's important to normalize this.
Yeah, it's great. I tend to think of mental health as it's like a puzzle. Everyone's puzzle is completely individual and you have to find the right pieces that work for you. And like in my own experience, I tried every piece going. I avoided medication because of the stigma, because of the horror stories online, because of things that people were saying and stuff like that. Put it off for a long, long time. Things got to a certain point and it was the only thing I'd left to try. I tried it, make a big difference for me. And I wouldn't advocate for or against it, but for my own puzzle, it was the bit that allowed all the other stuff to kick in and start working, and it made a big difference. But you mentioned there like about the dose and stuff like that, because I think also people, one thing people talked about is like, it took me 10 years to get off my pills and stuff like that. But you can talk to your GP about an exit strategy, you know. So same way as we turn the dose up, once we get the desired result, we want to start turning it down and work about, you know, about coming off these things, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that what we see on social media or in the media is like only people that have had negative experiences turn to talk about it. You know, I cannot tell you how many people are on antidepressants and you would never know, right? From like CEOs of massive organizations and businesses to, you know, your mum's walking about, you know, people are on these and do absolutely fine on them and they will never go and talk about it because they're just, you know, it's like talking about any other part of your medication history. Whereas if you turn online, it'll be like, oh my god, my doctor poisoned me with that thing, I couldn't wake up, I was a zombie. And that's absolutely valid. Some people will have that experience, and if that happens, I always say in the first few days, if you take this medication and you feel not quite right with it, then just stop it immediately, give me a phone, we can try something else. In the same way, it's like one shoe doesn't fit all, it's the same when it comes to pills. But when you're ready to come in, now we don't tend to regularly put antidepressants or onto repeat prescriptions, so you can't just, you know, there's an absolute review process that we have in practice. So you will have to phone up, and people get very moany about it because they think, I don't want to phone up every 4 weeks or every 2 months, so, you know, why can't you just put it on my repeat prescription? I understand that it can feel a bit inconvenient, but it's because every time you put in for that repeat prescription, the doctor will review that. We'll look at your notes, see how long you've been on it for, and we only give a finite amount before we ask you to book in for a medication review if you haven't already come in. And it's because we want to make sure that we don't want you on drugs. We don't want our patients on drugs forever if they don't need to be on them. So we will have that phone call. So you'll have a medication review where the doctor will be like, so how are you getting on? How are you feeling? How is life doing? Do you feel that you need to be on it? Or do you think we're at a point where we can think about coming off? And at that point, again, this will be an opportunity several times whilst you're on that drug for you to decide, am I ready? And then we never recommend that you stop something completely straight away. It's always about titrating it down. So whatever dose you're on, and if you're on the lowest dose, it might be that we'll say, right, okay, well, over the next week, maybe miss a day. So take one on one day, don't take it the next, take one on another day. If it's on a higher drug, we'll taper that down very gradually. And at each stage, you'll be monitored. You know, you let us know if you're feeling that things are getting worse again, we'll just put you right back up. We can take it. Maybe you're not ready. Let's review things at the moment. Do we maybe need more therapy? What's life like at the minute? Do you need some time off? Do you need some additional support? You know, and the GP is able to coordinate and manage a lot of these things for you. So that's kind of the exit strategy. Lots of patients very successfully come off it when they feel ready to. Some need to be on it for a very long time. Some need it for a few months, but there is no sort of dependence on it. But that said, mental health is, it's a huge spectrum of conditions. I'm talking more sort of generally for things like depression and anxiety. But of course, if there's other long-term mental health conditions, you'll be on other drugs for that, which, you know, this won't be applicable to.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it's always important to mention that, because we do fall into the trap of, you know, we say mental health and we don't necessarily mean all the aspects of mental health, right? So yeah, it's very, very important to remind people of that. Some really good advice I was given was think about the time of year when it's time to come off them. So, yeah, you know, Christmas, it's dark at night, it's cold, but, you know, aim for spring when the world's like waking up, and that's a much better time to be out there doing it alone and stuff like that.
Definitely. I get a lot of calls in December, and it happens every year. I think people are kind of thinking, okay, it's the end of the year, kind of thinking psychologically, working up to the new year, maybe now is the time to stop. But I always say, look, let's wait. Let's just wait. Let's get over Christmas. Equally, if there's like a big event in that person's life happening, it's never a good time to just make a change at that stage, because, you know, I think it could just, sometimes it can spiral things, particularly in winter, as you say. You know, lots of people naturally suffer from seasonal affective disorder, SAD. The days are darker, and we are more prone, because of lack of sunlight and the hormonal changes that that does to our own internal body clocks, we are prone to feel sluggish, a little bit down. And so absolutely, when it's like February, March time, I'll say, let's just give you another review in about 8 weeks time. And then absolutely, if you're feeling like it, let's do it at that point. And you find then that actually nature then does its own mood boosting thing. And we tend to be out and about more, we're meeting more people. And it's just generally a better time. So time of year is very critical.
Yeah, definitely. And just to kind of just touch on the side effects aspect, because they're so individual, and, you know, but you have got options if you can change your drug, right? If the side effects are, a problem for you.
Exactly. I mean, you know, again, it comes back to giving the examples of pain management, or if women are on hormonal treatment, like the pill or whatever, you know, people will always have different side effects with different drugs. We're all made up very differently. So if one antidepressant or medication doesn't work for you, we have so many options, so many different types of antidepressants too. So if one particular class of drugs doesn't work, we've got other ones that we can try. And again, some people find side effects, some don't. So it's really important not to talk to your, I don't know, neighbor next door and see what was your experience, because again, you don't know what medical history they've got, you don't know what other medications they might be on, they might have other medical problems that you don't have, and therefore how we react to a drug is so individualized. It's one thing never to compare with anybody else. Like, we shouldn't compare anyway, but that's one thing, never compare your side effects or drug interactions or experiences with somebody else that's had the same.
It always fascinates me, stuff like that, because humans, we're so strange, aren't we? We might take like medicine advice from someone that we wouldn't maybe take like childcare advice or work advice, or for some reason we latch onto that one that one fact, and it becomes gospel. for myself, just talking about like side effects, I did experience for the first couple of weeks some like mild like nausea, and my sleep was a bit funny and stuff. But I, all the way through it, although that is uncomfortable, to feel like well and a little bit nauseous was so much better than being like really, really down in the dumps.
Exactly. I mean, these drugs are there to help kind of almost like rebalance the chemical sort of problems that are taking place with all these neurotransmitters in our brain. So you are going to have maybe an initial kind of, you know, as you said, the common ones are things like nausea or a dry mouth or sometimes just feeling a little bit more clammy, but that settles down within a few days. There are some instances where some medications, some antidepressants can actually heighten the anxiety, can actually make the mood worse. That's the ones that we're really worried about, that if in the first few days of starting that you feel suicidal or you feel that, you know, anxiety is just tripled in level, then stop it immediately. So there are those, we will always caveat it with that, but that's very, very rare, doesn't tend to happen commonly at all, but it's important to be aware. And that's with, and this goes for every drug that you ever put into your body, is just be very vigilant in the first few days of taking it. If you don't feel right, stop it and speak to your GP. And we can always try, there's millions of options, those books that we have on our desks, which we call the BNF, which you'll sometimes have seen your doctor going through to go, which medication should we give you? It's not because we're thick and we don't know, it's just because there's millions of medications within the spectrum of mental health, so many options. So it's important to just have that at the back of your mind when you're starting something.
Yeah, very much so. And I think just to kind of just wrap up a little bit, I think the main thing really here is everything starts with conversation. And, you know, it's all about informed choice. So you can go and see your GP, you can talk through your options. And then if you decide that it's not for you, then that's completely fine, you know, but it having that conversation, having that information, information, you know, knowledge is power, isn't it? And the more information you get, someone once said to me that was very useful, is if you're going to take a drug, become a bit of an expert in it, you know, do some reading, find out, speak to the people who know about it, and then use all that information and make your choice from there.
Exactly. I think that there's so much misinformation online. I think always getting your information, no matter what element of health it is, get it from somebody who knows what they're talking about. Absolutely do your research, but when doing your research as well, make sure that the sites that you're using are credible. The NHS websites are always good to start off with. They'll give you, you know, everything that you need to know as an overview. And then there's always links there. There's lots of mental health charities that are doing incredible work, that have got lots of, you know, amazing resources as well to access. So, you know, it's endless, but what we do is we go onto social media or blog sites and we go down a rabbit hole, and you hear somebody else's negative experience. And remember, when we are feeling negative ourselves and we're not feeling so great, we attract that negativity too, because you just kind of, you go for what you're looking for. But I think just being able to channel it to sort of positive, credible, evidence-based sites is the answer. And if in doubt, just phone your GP. And now we have telephone consultations, we've got video consultations, you can come in and speak to us. There's lots of ways of doing it. As I said earlier, just write it down. You can always, you know, I've had patients that have just dropped in a letter at the surgery, or have sent an email. You can email in, you know, so there's lots of ways to be able to communicate to your doctor. And then from there, it's a partnership. You know, you have to be also able to inform your decisions and say, well, actually, I don't feel like that. I would like to try this and I would like to try that. And I think just go with it. Mental health, it's the most commonest thing that we're seeing at the moment. And the best thing you can do, sometimes even just that conversation, which is confidential, we never share it, we never talk about it to anybody else. Just having that out there in the open can be enough. Sometimes it could be therapy on its own, that's enough. Sometimes it could be just tweaks to your lifestyle, and that's enough. And sometimes it could be a medication, and that's enough. But you know, often you'll find it'll be bits and bobs of all of that. And ultimately the end point is for you to feel better, because when we feel better, we live longer, we live better, we live healthier, everything just works a lot better.
Yeah, Yeah, that sounds great. Poonam, thank you so much for joining me today. I've absolutely loved this conversation. I'm really keen. I will say to guests that I've on, I said this isn't a sad stories podcast. You know, we do have sometimes those episodes, but I kind of think that I want certain episodes to be a resource. And if people are struggling, they can scroll through my episode list and they can say, right, here's he is talking to someone who knows what they're talking about medication, and it can like play a little part in my decision. And I think we've done exactly that today. So I can't thank you enough for your time. Thank you very much for joining me.
Listening from the Proper Mental Podcast. Please like and subscribe.
Plus 5 stars.